Call the meeting of the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee to order. Representative Hoppe actually got here early so that he could review the minutes of the April 16th meeting, and he'll move those minutes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, seeing none, the motion carries. Representative Hillstrom is back with House File 157. She'll move House File 157, be recommended to pass, and re-refer to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration with a recommended re-referral then to the General Register. Representative Hillstrom, can you bring us up to, obviously we don't need a lot from you because we've heard your bill once before, but maybe you can walk us through what's the latest.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. So one of the things, this bill was heard and passed and sent to many other committees, and all along the way my goal has been to work out as many of the issues as we could. Mr. Chair, I have the DE4 amendment that I would like to get the bill in the shape that I would request.
Okay, being an author's amendment, Representative Hillstrom moves to DE4. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, seeing none, that motion carries. Representative Hillstrom, then, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is the bullion coin bill that you've all heard before and that we've been hearing much about. Members, this bill now has the fiscal note for these regulations, and it's actually in the omnibus, what is the bill called, Commerce and Housing and Jobs.
That's a good description. Big, 729, I believe it is.
Big bill. That's where the money is to take care of these requirements. And so this is just the policy that goes along with it. I'm not going to tell you that we've got 100% of everyone happy with it, but we have come a long way, Mr. Chair. This regulates people who sell bullion coins as investments. This is the only area of investments in Minnesota that is not yet regulated, and that's what this bill does, and I don't want to revisit all of it, Mr. Chair, unless you have questions.
Are there questions for Representative Hillstrom? We do. Yes, Representative Sudzinski.
We want to debate the bill a little bit more. Can we just hop right in it, or what's the...
No, you should feel free to do that. We want to kind of restrict the discussion to the changes that have been made.
Okay, okay.
So if you're comfortable doing that.
Well, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, just kind of looking at the exceeding $5,000 threshold, I don't remember if that was in the bill prior to this or not, but wanted to just visit with you about the potential, because the bullion and gold and it's such a fluctuating price, if you would, one, want to, I mean, we're tagging everything else that we're seeing to inflation as far as the price changes when it comes to regulation. Has there been any thought to, you know, rather than just have a static number, but because we're dealing with an investment rather than an op, you know, that we should maybe deal with how it's related to inflation rather than just have a static number?
But Mr. Chair.
Has there been thoughts on that at all?
In all of the discussions of all of the things that has come up, that has never come up.
Well, congratulations on that, Representative Zinski. Representative Hillstrom, do you care to comment about it? Are you going to think about that if it were to be... My guess is that it may be one of those topics that Representative Swidzinski continues to think about, maybe you want to think about with him.
Sure. And if we can talk about that offline, I would be happy to talk with you about it. But with all the folks that have been working on this and talking about this, I just hesitate to head down a new path at this moment.
Yes. Are there other questions, Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hillstrom, is this the amendment that you and I spoke about earlier today that at least gets pretty close to peace in the valley?
Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hoppe, yes, this has a show loophole in it.
Representative Hoppe, any follow-up to that?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I take it to mean that loophole allows dealers from all over to come here if there were a coin show, bullion show, something like that?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. It was like a rooster crows at midnight kind of. It has a show loophole in it, and we're all like, it was like a code word or something. I guess it meant something to folks. But are there other questions for, yes, Representative Woodard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being a little bit late. Representative Hillstrom, on the $5,000 marker there for bullion coin dealers, how do we know that they'll be at the $5,000 level? Is this self-reported, or how are we going to justify that? Or
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it's self-reported.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Are there other questions? We also have a handout from Mr. Atkins, my twin that I was separated from at birth. But thank you, Mr. Atkins. for the comments that are being shared with members in written form. And if there's questions for, we didn't anticipate taking additional testimony in light of the amendment, but I did want to make sure, since Mr. Atkins went to the effort of preparing this, that they be shared with members as well. Are there questions for either the testifiers or for Mr. Atkins? Okay. Well, you can come back, but we're mostly just answering questions. So, and I'm not going to cut you off, but I'm just, are there other questions for members at this point? Okay. Well, then,
Mr. Chair, do we want to hear from the Department of Commerce at all, since they're going to be the ones that are going to be?
You're good with it, right? They're good, Mr. Chair.
All right. There you go. Let the record reflect that Representative Hillstrom turned to the Department of Commerce liaison. He nodded. She said he's good. And if they have any objections, they'll come down right now. All right, it's like a marriage. Okay, nobody's objecting to the marriage.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could just make it really clear, many of the amendments that have been going on, and even the last amendment that had caused the consternation, actually came from Commerce. And so this has been this final amendment to get the industry to be a little bit more happy with the amendments that the Commerce Department needed. So this amendment should make Commerce very happy.
Okay. Thank you. And then we'll turn then to Mr. Atkins. You're welcome to testify briefly in light of we've got your previous testimony that you can consider still having been heard. And then we'll just ask that you not reiterate the points that you've made in writing.
And Mr. Yep. Chair, if I could actually...
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could just ask Mr. Atkins to put on the record who it is that he's representing today in his position before he puts it on the record.
I'm sure he will. Mr. Atkins, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. My name is Gary Atkins. I'm a coin dealer in Minnesota. I've been asked by numerous dealers in the state of Minnesota to speak on their behalf. I'm not a lobbyist. I'm not an attorney. So I hope that, does that answer your question today? Or?
Yes, Mr. Atkins, do you serve on any, thank you. Do you serve on any board related to dealers outside the state of Minnesota, and do you have a responsibility to them?
Yes, Representative Hillstrom, Mr. Chairman. I serve on the Industry Council for Tangible Assets. That is an organization that protects interests of coin dealers, bullion dealers, refiners, anybody involved in the precious metals and rare coin industry. I also serve on the American Numismatic Association on the Board of Directors, and that is the largest collector organization in the United States. Thank you. Basically, the coin dealers in Minnesota were in support of this legislation initially, and then our first testimony, we supported the legislation with a few objections, bonding, for example, and some other things. Since that time, the legislation has morphed into something completely different. It's very onerous regulation. It inhibits interstate commerce. It regulates dealers from outstate, not only Minnesota dealers, but also dealers from other states. And I have some information from your own House committee about interstate commerce. If you'd like to hear that, I'm happy to pull that out and read it to you. But anyway, that's one of the biggest problems with the legislation, regulation of interstate commerce. And now even the Attorney General's office has said that they have the right to regulate interstate commerce, and I wouldn't necessarily argue with that. But even though you can regulate interstate commerce, does it really do what you want it to do for this legislation? I don't believe it does, and I don't think other coin dealers in the state do as well. It basically limits consumer choice because dealers who are faced with reporting or registering for this legislation from out of state are going to look at it and say, we're not going to go through that. We're just going to not do business in Minnesota. That's some of the largest companies in the United States, including eBay, Apmex Corporation. They're the largest bullion dealer in the world, actually. They're a $1 billion company. eBay's a $65 billion company. Many large companies will no longer do business in Minnesota as a result of this legislation.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Well, we're going to let him finish his testimony, and then we'll come back to you, though. And Mr. Atkins, we do need you to, we actually got the next bill coming up in 5 minutes.
Thank you, I appreciate that. So, in other words, I guess the $5,000 threshold that was brought up before, that's way too low. That's the entry point for which dealers would have to register with the Commerce Department. Supposedly, there's some exemption in there for out-of-state dealers. But that's only if they're a part-time dealer, if they're coming into the state and they're only doing occasional shows in Minnesota. If they're a full-time coin dealer, they come to Minnesota, they do business here, more than $5,000, they still have to register. So the costs of doing this are unreasonable. I believe that this is going to be much, much more costly to the Commerce Department to enforce, if they really enforce it, than is what's been testified to. And it's going to add a lot of costs and burden to small businesses, primarily on the bonding issue. It's going to be difficult for smaller business people that have what I would call average credit rating to even get a bond. Bonds for a situation like this are very difficult to obtain, and most insurance agents would agree that, you know, very tough area of the law to understand, especially when it has a government regulation aspect to it. So, again, we advise you to please reconsider, send this bill back for more discussion. We haven't had the opportunity for a sit-down meeting with the Attorney General's office. Every discussion we've had has been on the fly, in the hallway, or some other place. It really hasn't. They haven't given us a real opportunity to sit down. Many, many emails and phone calls were made. No responses, generally speaking, to most of those inquiries. So I would appreciate it if you would consider today not moving this bill forward. Thank you,
Mr. Atkins. And then I've got on the list Representative Woodard, and then we'll give final word. Is going to be Representative Hillstrom, and then we're going to vote. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on the Representative Hillstrom, on the registration application that's new here, how is that data going to be treated? Is that going to be subject to 13D or? Yes.
Representative Hillstrom or the Department of Commerce may be better off responding to that piece of it. Mr. Brickwitty, thank you for joining us.
Mr. Chairman, Peter Brickwitty, Director of Government Affairs for the Department of Commerce. Representative, I believe that's correct.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Chair, will this be going to civil law then to take a look at that piece now that this is incorporated into the bill?
Thank you, Representative Woodard, for the question. Frankly, it actually goes back to rules before it would go anywhere else. Okay. And I'll leave it up to the Chair of Civil Law and the Chief Author to figure out what other committee steps it may have to make beyond rules.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Hillstrom, final word?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to quickly clarify that I actually spoke to eBay. Dan Larson is coming in to speak with me. They actually have their own lobbyist, and I just want to make that clear that we are having those conversations. And, Mr. Chair, I would just ask that you, again, pass this bill, allow it to go to rules, and continue to work on the process in this issue.
Thank you. And Representative Hillstrom renews her motion then that House File 157 is amended. We recommend it pass and refer to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Same sign.
No.
The motion prevails.
Thank you,
Representative Hillstrom. Next up is Representative Portman, who I think I couldn't see it behind Representative Portman, then we'll move that House File 1301 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. There is an A1 amendment. Representative Portman, is that an author's amendment?
It is, Mr. Chair.
Representative Portman will move the A1 amendment as an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Portman, your bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm sorry this bill is here. It is an energy policy bill, and we passed out of the Energy Policy Committee to the General Register. And then we were approached by the fiscal staff because the bill requested a study of the Department of Commerce. And the fiscal staff thought that there might be a fiscal impact and that the bill should then come to a fiscal committee for that to be looked at. The amendment we just adopted, however, removes any chance that there would be any fiscal impact of this bill, because it requires that instead of the Department of Commerce looking at these issues, that the Legislative Energy Commission look at these issues. And so there's no fiscal note and no fiscal impact. And what the bill does is just restates the energy conservation as a state policy goal, and that it should be cost effective.
Okay. Are there questions for Representative Hortman? Anybody come to testify with you?
I have people available to answer questions if people have questions.
Oh, the magic words.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hortman, with this change, does the Department of Commerce have any concerns about that?
Did he go?
He's out buying some coins.
the Department of Commerce, I don't think, has any concerns.
Representative Hortman.
We've talked to them before we brought the amendment forward, and they didn't have any concerns about it before either.
Thank you.
Okay. Any others with questions or concerns for Representative Hortman or for anyone else? Not Representative Hortman renews her motion that House File 1301 is amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
Seeing none, that motion well. Seeing a couple, but it still prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hortman. Sketching out the balance of the agenda, we're going to send for Representative Abler, who's got House File 1721. He's up in Ways and Means and will be joining us shortly. Right now, though, I'm going to turn over the gavel to Representative Schoen, who will chair the balance of the meeting. House File 1754 is going to be laid over and not presented today. The bill that I intend to present next is House File 1755. So with that, I will turn it over to Representative Schoen. There was one item. It's actually in your folders under 1754. We did receive a letter from Fairview, and I believe their letter applies to both 1754 and 1755. Wow. So if you can pull that out of your folder for 1754, we'll then talk about House File 1755. I'll turn it over to Representative Schoen at this point.
Chairman, I would move House File 1755 be recommended passed and referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration with a recommended referral then to the General Register.
All right. Representative Atkins.
It's almost like I've done this before,
yes.
Isn't it, Mr. Chairman? I am going to keep my my remarks relatively brief. House File 1755, and I appreciate the Chairman's co-authorship with it on this bill with me. As members are aware, there was a possible sale, a proposed sale, merger, acquisition, however one wants to describe it, that brought to light the possible acquisition by Sanford Health of the Fairview system. Part of the Fairview system is our very own University of Minnesota Hospitals and Clinics. It brought to light a concern that many legislators on both sides of the aisle shared with me, and that was whether or not that would place control of our University of Minnesota Hospitals and Clinics under some out-of-state entity's authority. This is not, and I will expressly say it probably more than once, this is not to bash Fairview, it's not to bash Sanford, it's not to give or cast in any bad light any of the entities involved. I have nothing but respect for those entities. But for the sake of example, replace Sanford in that possible acquisition that we were talking about not more than 10 days ago or 2 weeks ago with New York Hedge Fund. And picture New York Hedge Fund acquiring Fairview Systems and the University of Minnesota Hospitals and Clinics. With the sort of investment that we have made in undergraduate and graduate educations for our physicians, with the fact that the University of Minnesota's hospital is the preeminent institution for physician training, over $1 billion in assets, $1 billion in revenues, I should say, that go through the University of Minnesota Hospital. And where control of those assets could be, or those revenues could be peeled off and shared with. There's just a number of concerns. I'm not here to tell you that I have the magic answer, but one thing that I know is that, and I think many members on both sides share my concern, is that we don't want to have the University of Minnesota Hospitals and Clinics controlled by some entity that's outside of Minnesota. There's just too much at stake, too much at risk, too much to protect to have control of an institution like the University of Minnesota Hospitals come under the control of someone outside of the state of Minnesota. That's the underlying impetus for the bill, Mr. Chairman, and I would ask that members review the letter from Fairview. Mr. Moody, who's the interim CEO for Fairview, has shared his thoughts, and I appreciate those. We also have two physicians here on behalf of the University of Minnesota Hospital, and I'd like to call upon them at this point to share their thoughts with you.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. And Dr. Aaron Friedman and Dr. Bobby Daniels, if you don't mind both coming forward to join Representative Atkins. And either one of you two can decide who's going to go first, and if you just state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and Representatives, thank you. I'm Aaron Friedman. I'm the Vice President for the Health Sciences and Dean of the Medical School. I'll let Bobby introduce herself when she weighs in. We wanted to first thank all of you for the opportunity to have a chance to talk with you and also to lay out just a couple of issues. One of them is following up on Representative Atkins' presentation to point out that the Academic Health Center, which is an important part of the University of Minnesota, and by the way, we have provided some written testimony that I think has been shared with all of you, so we're not going to go through that in detail, but just highlight some of the material. The Academic Health Center is an important portion of the University of Minnesota in general. It comprises six schools, so the medical school, the dental school, the nursing school, public health, pharmacy, and vet med. And those are all either entities that provide clinical care or, in fact, entities that are important in understanding population health of the University of Minnesota. So we clearly have an important portion of what the state, what a state asset is inside the University of Minnesota. And in our testimony, we point out a couple of things. First, we have more than 6,400 students in those six schools, and we have 62 degree programs in them. We train nearly 70% of Minnesota's health professionals. We educate about 80% of the state's medical school graduates and 55% of the state's advanced practice nurses. We oversee, in those six schools, approximately $400 million of research per year. Our clinics and hospital sites see more than a million patients a year. And our students receive clinical training at those sites. Our faculty conduct research at those sites. They provide clinical care at those sites. And therefore, without this support, the university's programs would be at some significant jeopardy. And hence, the importance of the University of Minnesota Medical Center, the Amplatz Children's Hospital, and those things that are related to our Fairview activity is clearly a part of this. Fairview and where we work is not only an important clinical site, it is an important educational site, and it's an important research site. And the materials that we've provided, I think, highlight that. I wanted to take one other minute or two and then turn it over to Bobby. The university transferred its ownership of the University of Minnesota Hospitals and Clinics to Fairview in 1997. It is not a simple arrangement. It's a somewhat complicated affiliation arrangement, but over the last 16-plus years, we've been working on that arrangement and continue to work on that arrangement. Our portfolio has grown, as has Fairview's. So it is clearly important that we maintain a close working relationship with the primary system that provides clinical care, and I've just explained why that's important. We need a partner that is interested in our mission and understands the infrastructure and the support that's necessary to support that mission. And therefore, who we are associated with is an important part of our ability to complete that mission for the state of Minnesota. So as I mentioned, it's a complicated relationship, complicated by the fact that every day the number of patients we see, the work that we do, and so forth is ongoing. It's not simple stuff. One other point. The events and the activities around the last few weeks, in particular the Attorney General's investigation through the decision of Sanford to not pursue the merger, were not initiated by the university. Secondly, we did have concerns about a potential merger. We would have concerns about a potential merger with anybody given the scope of the activities that we do, $400 million in research, the number of students and residents that we train and so forth. So the questions that we raised were around those academic concerns and those clinical concerns or issues, and we would raise them under any circumstance. And lastly, we laid those out to the Attorney General through a letter that came from the university president, and that material was all provided to not only the Attorney General but to our partner Fairview. So they saw these concerns at the time that they were laid out. So even after Stanford pulled out of, or made the decision to pull out of the discussions, we continue to be interested in pursuing the relationship that we already have through the affiliation arrangement with Fairview. I'll stop there and turn it over to Bob.
Thank you, Dr. Friedman. And Dr. Daniels, state your name for the record and go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and representatives, I'm Bobby Daniels. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of University of Minnesota Physicians. University of Minnesota Physicians is the organization through which the medical school faculty and physicians practice medicine and provide patient care. We're actually a separate 501c3 corporation with its own governing board, but we exist under the auspices of the University of Minnesota Board of Regents. We have 920 physicians and are one of the largest multi-specialty groups, not only in the Twin Cities, but the state. We manage and provide physician services in ambulatory clinics, as well as physician services at the University of Minnesota Medical Center, the AmPlatz Children's Hospital, both of which are owned by Fairview. We also provide clinical services to other parts of the Fairview system. These services include cardiology, oncology, neonatal intensive care, and intensive care services to adults as well. University of Minnesota Physicians also serves other healthcare systems across the state, such as our activity at TRIA in partnership with Health Partners and Park Nicolet and the Veterans Administration. About 80% of our patients come from outside the Fairview system, and that means while our partnership with Fairview is critical, the specialty care we provide is a statewide resource. We also provide more than $40 million in financial support annually to the medical school for academic programs. I'd also like to spend just a couple of minutes bringing you up to speed on the Fairview Health Services. Fairview is the second largest healthcare system in the Twin Cities and has annual revenues of $3 billion. It's a system of community-based ambulatory clinics, hospitals, and physician practices, senior citizen services, pharmaceutical services, and since 1997, University of Minnesota Medical Center and AmPlatz Children's Hospital. Fairview sites are the principal ones for training medical students and residents. 370 of the medical school's 910 residents train at UMMC and AmPlatz. Fairview also provides the principal sites for clinical research and provides the principal hospital-based practice site for the medical school faculty. Over half of Fairview's revenues come from UMMC, AmPlatz, and other UMP and Fairview-related service lines.
Thank you, Dr. Daniels. And so is there anybody else in the audience that wishes to testify for or against the bill at this point? And if members have any questions, Representative
Hoppy.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
I apologize for the debris part there. It was a rough day on the floor.
I'm here to help.
Yeah.
So, Representative Atkins, and I'm not sure if you have the answer to this or somebody else does, what happens right now with this legislation not being passed if the U of M did decide to sell the whole hospital, the whole kit and caboodle to some offshore entity? Who makes that decision?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hoppe, there is, as I understand it, a veto provision built into the arrangement with Fairview and the university that would enable the university to put a stop to that. The concern, though, is nonetheless the same, which is that to the extent of foreign, and the bill as it reads says any foreign corporation, I believe, or anything outside of Minnesota. Foreign simply means outside of Minnesota. And I know that in the original bill as introduced, there were some folks that were afraid, you know, were Cayman Islands kind of entity or somebody else's. It simply would allow for control outside of the state of Minnesota. And this just adds a little belt and suspenders to the approach that we're taking to ensure that it's not acquired as both Dr. Friedman and Dr. Daniels alluded to, it's a heck of an asset that we just want to be do the best that we can to make sure that we protect.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, none of us wants to see this become, you know, Hawkeye Hospital or Badger Hospital. I don't think that's going to happen. I didn't know how this thing worked now, but I maybe this is double suspenders or something. I just don't know how really
just
necessary it is.
So
Representative
so
Atkins.
And I apologize. Representative or Ms. Chair and Representative Hoppe, currently there is nothing in Minnesota law that would prevent it. That much is true. There is, as I understand, the individual or the partnership, for lack of a better term, between Fairview and the university, on the university's control. They would have some limitation or some ability to limit the transfer, but there explicitly is nothing in Minnesota that would prevent it from occurring.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Atkins, or possibly the testifier. What caused the 1997 purchase? I mean, what was it that motivated the University of Minnesota to sell to Fairview in the first place?
Mr. Chair and
Dr. Friedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives. A number of things. In the 1990s, the university's hospital was running a deficit. And so the university had some concern about that. But I think there is a larger context that's important, and that is across the country. A lot of universities were being informed that running a healthcare facility could be a problem, including being informed by the bond raters that that might impact how the university's bonding might appear, that their healthcare sector, if you will, could actually lower their ratings. So the University of Minnesota, seeing both of those go on, look for a purchaser and somebody to take over the university hospital. Since then, oddly enough, reacquisition by universities of their of health services, of hospitals and clinics, has occurred, and a number of places that originally had sold there have now a number of universities have reacquired them: Miami, Stanford, UCSF, and so forth. So I think the context is important, both in the 1990s and now into the 2000s.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so what has happened to the system since 97? Is it expanded? Is it profitable? It sounds like it's a $3 billion entity. So can you kind of briefly kind of tell us what's happened since 97?
Dr. Daniels?
Fairview, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair and representatives, the Fairview system has expanded considerably, as has the university physician practice. And in fact, the university physician practice has expanded at an even greater rate than the Fairview system. And as I had mentioned earlier, at the time of our activities make up well over 50% of the activity within Fairview. At the time of the merger, it was way less than that. You know, so I think that demonstrates the strength of the university practice and the value of the two organizations working together to create growth and a successful financial outlook.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you. And so the complex relationship, Dr. Friedman, that you talked about, I mean, I kind of read through your notes here, is that contractual with Fairview? And I know that Representative Atkins said that it would require that you have veto authority over an acquisition. Is the rest of the complex relationship part of that contract, so that if Sanford or whoever were to come in and negotiate a merger, would they still have to abide by the contract that that is currently in place between Fairview and the U of M?
Dr. Friedman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. It's actually even a little tougher than that. We don't actually have a veto power. Now, it's important to recognize that the Board of Regents, the UM physicians, and those activities that are part of the University of Minnesota really do, at the end of the day, report to the Board of Regents. And so our activities, especially around student activities and research activities, are under their purview. However, I think it would be somebody other than me who ought to explain exactly what the legal, what the affiliation agreement allows legally with respect to the universities either truly vetoing it as opposed to what I think is more likely, and that is a series of questions that would need to be addressed in order for the university to agree that these particular assets would be transferred to a different partner. Also, I think it's fair to point out that this affiliation arrangement, which was anticipated for, I think it's 90 years or 87 years or something like that, actually has an out clause in 2026. That would have to be declared by one party or the other in 2023. So it wasn't meant to be unraveled. It was actually meant to be a relatively tight relationship and one that was meant to help both partners.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you. And final question here on the foreign entity. I know that Representative Hoppe asked the question about what would happen if a foreign entity were to purchase or to merge with Fairview. And I don't know, Representative Atkins, whether you were serious about any foreign in this bill, that any foreign entity would be anybody outside of Minnesota. But if that's the case, I mean, what would be, can you give me an example of the detrimental nature of an outside entity, whether it's from, God forbid, Wisconsin or Iowa or somebody, coming in and wanting to merge, and there was an agreement that this is a good idea, that actually it would be a mutually beneficial agreement that the U would agree to, that Fairview would agree to, but because of this bill, isn't possible because we would tell them you're a foreign entity and it's you can't do it. So going back to the original question, the real question about this is, what would happen? I mean, what is the bad thing that would happen if we had that occur?
Representative Atkins?
I'd actually be interested in hearing the testifiers if they'd have any misgivings about the possible transfer, and then I'd have some of my own opinions. But
Dr. Friedman or Dr. Daniels?
Thank you, Chair and Representative. So I think one of the things that we were trying to point out with the information that we provided is how not only how critical we believe we are to the state of Minnesota, but I also think we have to recognize that we share that mission with the people and with the people of the state of Minnesota and with this body. In other words, we believe that we have a responsibility to the state of Minnesota. And I think the fundamental question that anybody would have to answer at the end of the day is, does whomever might be acquiring this asset, do they share the same thing? Let me give you an example. In the medical school, we accept 85% of our students from the state of Minnesota, because we believe that those are likely to be people who will stay in the state of Minnesota. And as we demonstrated, more than 70% of the doctors who practice in Minnesota today were either medical school graduates or trainees in our residencies. So I think it would be fair to ask the question, is that likely to happen if it is acquired by somebody else? Will they share that mission across the board that we share today?
Representative Woodard?
Mr. Chair, I guess just a quick comment. I know Representative Atkins wants to say that as well, or to talk about that. But at the end of the day, that's true, and you would have the ability to negotiate that or not, right? I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about, is that between you and Fairview and whoever that entity is, you would have to confirm that that is correct. Obviously, you came into agreement with Fairview in 1997. That mission appears to be continuing down the route you want it to. You know, it has grown. It seems that your mission is still there. We're still educating Minnesota doctors from Minnesota. So I guess I'm still a little confused as to what the bad implication would be if you were to enter into a negotiation.
Chair and Representatives, I think one thing we have to remember is that Fairview is a Minnesota service. They also share responsibility to the state. Their founding was based on that. So I think, again, that's built into their roots, and it's built into ours. And I do believe that we have to be vigilant about the question of whether, irrespective of whether we have a contractual arrangement, whether the kind of responsibilities and whether the partner will provide the infrastructure that's necessary to be able to do that. Remember, what we're saying is all those students have to have some place to actually practice so that we're watching. And we know they can do what it is that we've told the citizens of the state they can do when they get that degree, whether it's an MD or an RN or a PharmD. And that's the fundamental question that we have. We believe that's our responsibility, and we would hope that any partner that we have would share that mission-based responsibility, not just a contractual
one. Representative Chairman and Representative Woodard, I think it goes even beyond what Dr. Friedman indicated, and that is I think the people of the state of Minnesota have a significant stake in this, and their voice, their only voice, quite frankly, is through this body. And whether I've got the language perfect here or not, and by the way, I'll be amending my motion. I think it ought to go to health policy because that's what these folks have, even though that's one more committee stop, I get that, and I'm already after deadline. But that's what we're talking about. And that is, that's just to demonstrate that I've listened to the testimony, what these two folks have just said, and the potential dire consequences if there is not that shared mission, I absolutely believe that this body ought to play some role on behalf of the people of the state of Minnesota to ensure that that mission continues to be as focused as it has in terms of providing Minnesotans with what they've come to expect of our landmark, our flagship University of Minnesota hospitals and clinics, and the sort of valuable work that these folks do for us. That sounded pretty good, didn't it? I thought that was good. Write that one down. I may have to give that speech again.
And I feel bad that I couldn't get Representative Hoppe off my tongue earlier, but I can get Representative Swedzinski no problem right now.
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're one of a few, so I appreciate that. Really just kind of questioning, the testifiers kind of mentioned about kind of what's been going on nationally when it comes to reacquisition of schools and hospitals like this. Where are we seeing this going? You know, do we somehow tie the hands? Obviously this is not going to affect reacquisition, this bill in front of us, but is that a plan? I mean, is there a road being laid to go in that direction since that was brought up here in a committee? Or is that because that was my other line of questioning, has this type of bill happened in other places? Have we seen acquisitions of schools like this from out-of-state entities in other states? And so because you brought that up, that's why I'm going in that direction. So,
Dr. Friedman, is this like chocolate being good for you again?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. So I can't speak to the question of whether other states have considered bills like this one. I honestly don't know the answer to that. I can speak to the issue of the reacquisitions, and I think it should be pointed out that the primary reason that reacquisitions have occurred has been the ability to chart a mission destiny, that universities have recognized, and I should point out that some of the reacquisitions have been from for-profit organizations, and some have been from not-for-profit organizations. And in each case, the issue really was around being able to continue to have the sort of control, if you will, over education, research, the clinical care that's delivered, and so forth. But I can't speak to whether other bills such as this have been in other state legislatures.
Well, to that point,
Representative Atkins
and Representative Swedzinski, I don't want to be the first where it does happen, and we see Goldie Gopher forced to don a Badger sweater because some Wisconsin, no offense to Wisconsin, but the point is we've made such an investment in this, and we count on it so dearly, that it shouldn't be the kind of thing where we allow that control to be exercised by somebody outside of the state of Minnesota.
Representative Swedzinski.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just kind of from a practical standpoint, would it make more sense that we have the right of first refusal? As an entity, if we're talking about potential reacquisition at some point in the future, obviously that's not our mission or long-term goal or whatever that might be. But if something was to happen, I mean, I think you could accomplish the same thing essentially without having an outright ban, because I don't know, are we as a legislature inserting ourselves? We talked about we're the only entity that can actually make this decision or whatever, but are we also inserting ourselves into a situation where we haven't been necessarily involved in the past, and should we just simply give first a right refusal from the folks? I mean, the Board of Regents are elected by us. Those are other representative entities that I don't think those people that we have elected to that board have. That is their goal in life, is to represent the U. And There you go.
Well,
it's more of a statement, I guess, than a...
Actually, Mr. Chairman, Representative Spudzinski and his Dr. Friedberg, will... is it Friedberg or Friedman, for heaven's sakes, will confirm, though. I've actually written down right of first refusal, because I think, as I was sitting here and listening to some of the comments and conversation, it just goes to show that these hearings really do have value. There's the fix isn't in. I think before I get to the next committee, I'll give a lot of consideration to that. And possibly propose that in health and human service policy. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Zellers?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Dr. Friedman, my question maybe takes a little bit darker turn. Say the financial situation isn't as good as somebody nowhere near your skill and competence and mission-driven performance takes over and things don't go so well. Who, if either Fairview or the university start losing money and we're facing bankruptcy, who is responsible? Who's going to be the one paying the bill if things start going south, I guess? And that's under the current agreement.
I'll let that go. Dr. Daniels?
Chair, Representative, since Fairview is a separate corporation, any bankruptcy would be their responsibility. For their hospital-based system. University of Minnesota Physicians is a $420 million corporation, and if poorly run, could also face that, and that would be dealt with by the university and the regents.
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Dr. Daniels. So the reason I ask the question is if one of the other starts going bad and someone's looking at divorce, you know, who gets to run away first? And if it's Fairview or if it's university physicians and are looking for another partner, by the looks of Representative Atkins' bill, you know, there's no more dating for life. So if you can't go to an outside entity, so say someone else sees it and says, you know, Fairview decides, you know what, we don't want to be a part of what the U of M, or let's say it's the other way around, because we don't think you're going to ever have that problem with the university physicians, see Fairview not doing so well, and they decide that we'd like to separate from. Now, I get that that's probably part of what may or may not have gone into the unit looking at buying this, but what if it's not Fairview, and there is somebody, and God forbid it's from, you know, it's the Badger next door, okay, or it's, you know, the Hawk, or even worse, it's the Gamecocks down in South Carolina. Under this bill, could they not, I mean, would we just let... that partnership would go into bankruptcy and then unfortunately have a lesser product in the end.
Dr. Daniels?
So Chair and Representative, under the affiliation agreement, UMP, the physicians, are bound to keep the same level of activity in association with Fairview as was there in 1997. So that is but a small fraction of what we currently do and could move that activity elsewhere if there was a suitable partner or a preferred partner. We don't envision doing that, but that would be the provision in the affiliation agreement. Fairview cannot walk away from the University Hospital. They've made not only commitments to provide clinical care there, but the affiliation agreement, as is delineated in the testimony, but the part that we didn't speak out verbally, really includes support, a responsibility for the research and academic mission of the university.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Dr. Daniels. That would be my concern, though, is if this starts going, if something goes bad on either side of this, we limit ourselves to someone. I would prefer someone helping us out than going into bankruptcy or losing that high level. And I speak from personal experience with my brother, with my son. We've had not only exemplary care from the University of Minnesota, but when my little brother could not find a hospital to do the surgery, Dr. Folker was the only doctor in North America that would take that. So I want you to maintain that high level of not only care, but, you know, partnership. And, you know, I think, you know, Representative Rukavina would probably be tap dancing his little shoes at the look of Representative Atkins' bill, because this isn't just America first, it's Minnesota first and only. So He's probably smiling down on you right now, Representative Atkins. But
the thing with tap shoes on him—that's all.
They're size two, but I just don't ever want to limit our ability to have anybody, whether they're a Minnesota-born company, a Minnesota native who now lives in another state, help us out if we need it. And that would be my concern with Representative Atkins' bill, and maybe the suite's idea of the right of first refusal is the way to go. So thank you, though, Dr. Friedman and Dr. Daniels, for joining us today.
Representative Atkins, do you have something to that point?
Mr. Chairman, what I'd first off, I want to thank everybody for their comments and their input. And I do think perhaps we could invite Representative Rukavina down for a special guest appearance so that he could have his say and talk about buying American underwear or whatever it was that he was on the last time we. But with the deference to the committee, I know we've got Representative Abler, I think, was here.
We have Representative Hillstrom has a question as well, too.
What I was going to suggest is maybe take the final questions on this bill and move it, and then let Representative Abler. I also don't want to impose too much on Dr. Friedman and Dr. Daniels' time. But I'd like to have them have a chance to talk about Representative Abler's proposal as well. So why don't I take the remaining questions, and then we'll let Representative Abler present his bill.
Yep, Representative Hillstrom is our final question, and then we'll move along.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, or to the testifiers, isn't this all a nonprofit? And so aren't there all rules about out-state companies and Minnesota nonprofit status and tax-exempt status and all of those things that we require both in healthcare and to get, for example, property tax exemptions? Doesn't that all come into play if an out-of-state company takes this?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, I think the simplest thing to say is yes. There are express rules. We could spend quite a bit of time talking about all of the rules that would be, and I think if I followed the Attorney General's inquiry, they were looking along some of those lines as well. So suffice it to say that, yes, that's in place, but there is nothing under current Minnesota law that would prevent an out-of-state acquisition or acquisition by an out-of-state entity of our University of Minnesota Hospital. So that's what this statute does, and with that, unless there's a follow-up, I'd like to...
There is.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, actually, yes. So, the follow-up is, I don't think you should do the right of first refusal. I think there are many, many other things that come into play, and I think you should leave the bill as it is, rather than going to giving folks from outside this state the opportunity to come in and take our assets.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom and all members of the committee, thank you. I'm going to leave, obviously, Representative Schoen in the chair's spot there, but I know that we invited Representative Abler to come down and present his bill as well, and I'll just finish by thanking Dr. Friedman and Dr. Daniels. I very much appreciate you. If you're all right, Stan, Representative Abler, do you want Dr. Daniels and Dr. Friedman to stay at the desk as you present your bill as well?
Sure.
All right.
And Representative Atkins, you just want to renew your motion that it House File 1755 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration?
Actually, I would amend that.
Health and Human Services Policy.
Please.
All right.
Mr. Chair, procedurally, doesn't it have to go to rules and then go to...
Okay, so let me... he renews his motion that House File 1755 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration with recommended referral to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy.
That's my motion, Mr. Chairman.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Abler. Chair moves that House File 1721 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your attention to this this topic, and you've had a pretty good discussion, I could just tell by as I walked in. And hopefully members got a copy of the letter from Fairview. Did this get sent to everybody? Is that in the packets? And then also a copy of this blue sheet, which is an editorial that I wrote. So this is what I see and why Representative Fisher and I put this bill together, and I thank him for his help. He couldn't be here, but, it goes without saying, I'm just glad they're sitting here. They don't get to talk unless you have a question for them, because they've already been certainly very enlightening. We have a couple assets in this state, Mr. Chair and members. We have the U, which has been there since... before the state, and we're really proud of it. It's an asset beyond compare. You can't value it. It's what puts us on the map for our research and education and medical training. And the times have changed from when you could have a lot of little small operations and make it work. And they have a partner, Fairview. And Fairview is also a wonderful, long-standing, really good company. And I didn't mean to cause any umbrage to them or any insult to them as I put forward my language. But in the discussion, and so that's why I put their letter out. They wrote a very nice letter to me, and they are equally committed to the welfare of Minnesota. And we would be bad off without them as well. And Sanford's a fine company. And they're growing in Minnesota, especially on the western side, and good for them too. But what I hope comes out of this discussion through a bill like I have and Representative Atkins' two bills and Attorney General Swanson's hearings is to help us remember what we have in our hands here and what it could be. And if things stay the same, they go backwards. And if what you learn in medical science isn't good 20 years from now because it's changed, and the body is the same, but we learn more about it. And how you go about it, how you do your business models, how you reach out, how you attract students, how you attract faculty, how you make, how you discover the undiscoverable, how we do the work we do, needs to be vital and growing, and you have to have enough economy of scale. And when I heard about the possibility of the U acquiring Fairview, I thought, that is really cool. They would be the largest employer in Minnesota, the second largest academic health center in the state, or in the country. They would be right on the cutting edge of all that we want to be. And there's nothing wrong with them staying how they are, and Fairview staying how it is, and all the people staying how they are. But there's no dream in that. There's no great accomplishment in that. And so the language I put forward was, if you want to buy Fairview with all the money we've put into it, with our community tax options and things that we could have spent, we could have charged them value. I hear from the hospitals about community benefit. And so we give them lots of privileges. We give them lots of preferences. Well, those don't cost nothing. I've had the privilege and bane of being the chair of this, the Health and Human Services Finance Committee, on the worst interval ever. I understand what $1 billion and $1 million and $100 million buys, and that you make a choice. I never served on taxes, but you also make choices there about where you're going to spend your $100 million and what it gets you, and people that want that value have to give something back for it. And so all I said was, if you want to buy the hospital, go ahead. You don't get all the stuff we've given you. Make it a business deal, but it's a business deal. Now, with the U, on the other hand, with the value of that is they're not going anywhere. You know, they're not going to move to Hawaii anytime soon. It'd be silly to have the University of Minnesota in Hawaii. And so they are here, and they precede our state, and when we quit being a state, they're still going to be here, I guess. And so the idea that was exciting to me. And so that was exciting, and also the Mayo idea. Should we help a private company? Well, if it's Mayo, maybe. Again, Minnesota, what are we known for, if anything? I mean, we got some taconite, we got some forest. But we're known for healthcare. And so how do we make Minnesota what it could be? Think big or think small. And so I think that's kind of cool, and it's being retooled, and we should do those kind of things. And so those are unique kinds of things. They're not for any kind of business. I don't think if we want to get a bigger car company to come sell cars, you know, and down on the strip, that would make any sense. Unless they could be something like what they have brought forward here. So I encourage us to think big. And if you don't think big, you're not going to go anywhere. We spent our time on our budgeting last cycle just trying to survive. There's been some dreams expressed, this new one here where there's been a little bit of money. But I encourage us to take seriously what this could be. And at the very least, what's going to happen is that Fairview and you are going to become better partners. They're going to become focused, and the dialogue has happened in the light of day. And what we've done in this committee and through Attorney General Swanson's committee and as the bills have just been drifting around is we've been making people think. And when you start to think about what you're getting, what the future is, and what you can get out of the assets we have, if you make them, help them to grow and to become reorganized and buff and shined and maybe doubled, you really got something. And so if that dialogue has been advanced by the efforts here, that's a good start. And so I see nothing but blue sky and sunshine on the horizon. Sorry, Mr. Chair, about this stuff. And I'm excited to be at this level of the discussion. And I'm trying to pour a little gas on the fire of what the U can be and what Mayo can be and how we can get jobs and economy and people coming to Minnesota. And so we have lousy weather reps and hot hoppy sometimes, but otherwise you couldn't go so
long.
Oh, you said winter. Okay.
We love winter.
That's right. Yeah, it could go away anytime soon to suit me. But anyway, so that's I want to express that, and I hope that, and I know in the process when you have these kinds of interactions, that there's some chafed feelings on the part of Fairview and you and Sanford and okay, well that happens. You have a discussion. So now the adults move on, and they think, what was the dream? Blue sky and sunshine, but reality and jobs and healthcare, and not just jobs, but saving people's lives, making a difference in the third world countries, bringing. Foreign trained nationals in here to hone their skills to become, you know, able staffs of our estate in the rural area, making better quality for us, better quality for the country, with us being the hub of that. I think that's a worthwhile dream, and that's what I when I talked to the people here, they convinced me that they didn't realize they were convincing me, but I took that and went a little bit further, and it excites me, Mr. Chair. And so that's what I have to say, and then I do have a request. In the letter, Fairview requested I would not advance my bill. And there's two bills moving, and that's plenty. And so out of request for them and out of respect for them and what I think they have to offer, I'm asking you not move my bill today, but just take this chance to listen to my vision and the dream. And I think that sometimes we get so caught in the minutia we miss the big picture. And I hope we get lost in the big picture of this and then trust these good people to deal with the minutia. And I'm pretty excited that from this point forward, there's going to be more dialogue with these great people in Fairview. And then Sanford will evolve into a Minnesota, you know, company more and more as it makes sense. So that's my commentary, Mr. Chair, and I'll be happy to stand for questions.
Representative Baylor, and thank you for clarifying again that, you know, this isn't specifically about a particular company. It hasn't been about the U. Well, it is about the U. It's about we love the U. And you know it, and the U loves us, I hope too. But thank you. And then, first off, are we going to have somebody from the hospital association? Are they still going to come up? I see. I recognize. They're, so I'm going to get the. I'm going to recognize that Lori Moss is waving his head. No, that they're not going to speak now, or is.
Mr.
Oh,
Chair,
he,
can I just quick ask a question?
That. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just because the testifiers may need to address some of this, but I just need somebody to define what the charitable asset is. So, because that's what it says on line 1.8, that it has to be returned to the general fund. And what does that mean? Building? And how do you return that to the general fund, the hospital? But I just don't know what it is.
Representative Abler, are you maybe looking at what maybe they received in, I mean... tax exemptions, all sorts of, I mean, looking at trying to figure out how to add all that up at some point with Mr. what Chair. Your intent is on that, even though you're talking about laying the bill over?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, it's a really good question. And at this point, I think it's a thematic point. If I was going to advance the bill, I would come up with a really, really good definition by now. I sense the need to create this dialogue in a rather hasty sense. And so, frankly, I thought of what I would like to write down at 11 o'clock and had jackets by 4. Because if you know, they were introduced actually before the Atkins bills on the anyway, on Monday. But my intention is this, is that there's benefits that accrued to the corporation because of the fact they were in Minnesota and because we have ways to look after really loved nonprofits who we want to stick around, and we absolve them of various taxes. And a lot of other responsibilities that would be worth some value. How that's valued, I don't know. I'm sure it's in the hundreds of millions and maybe more of value. And so it meant to separate it from the hardware of a building, a book of business, receivables, credits, and all that as you're going to buy a hardware store. Mm-hmm. If you buy a hardware store, there's none of that. And so what's ever different between a hardware store and whatever Minnesota imputed to them by virtue of all our generous tax policies toward our very favored nonprofits?
Thank you. And Mr. Peltier, you're waving off the pitch here? Okay. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank Representative Atkins for holding this hearing today, and also thank you, Representative Abler, for bringing forth this interesting bill. And I'll remember it. And as a committee member of Health Policy and Health Finance, and also as a Minnesotan, you know, I value the University of Minnesota and the work that they do throughout the entire state of Minnesota. And so going forth, I think that this is something that the legislature should have some ownership in and about. And so I just hope that this, as this goes forward, that we remember the investments that we have made in the University of Minnesota and will continue to make. And I do appreciate having both of these bills before us today, members, and I think this is not going away, and I value the openness also of the discussion. And thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fritz, and thank you, Representative Abler. And, you know, I'd just like to say this. I think to the public, again, it's not about any particular institution. Thank you to the both of you doctors for taking the time to come over here and stand up for the U as well. You know, I look back to the U in 1967. One of my childhood best friend's dads got a kidney transplant from his brother, and he's still alive to this day. I think he's one of the fifth longest living organ transplant in the country, maybe. But you know, and then the better part of the story is the nurse stole his heart, and they're still married to this day too. So, at that, let's thank you for everything. I value and cherish what the U does. And at the Representative Babler's request, we're going to lay over House File 1721. And if that's it, this committee is adjourned.
All right.